I have to start today by pulling back the curtain a little bit on how we usually put this show together. Because, I mean, normally when I sit down at this microphone, there is a literal physical weight on the desk in front of me. The producers will usually hand over this massive binder stuffed with research papers or, you know, a stack of really dense books.
Oh, yeah. It's usually an absolute mountain of data.
Exactly. And we take that mountain, we spend hours sifting through all the jargon.
Yeah.
We try to extract the actual signal from all the noise for you, the listener. It's a whole ordeal.
It really is a massive process of reduction. We take this absolute avalanche of information and we try to find the specific rocks that actually matter, you know, the stuff that's actually useful to a modern consumer of information.
But today, when I walked into the studio, there was no binder at all. There was no stack of books. Sitting right in the center of the desk was a single piece of standard printer paper.
Just one solitary page.
Just one page.
Yeah.
And on that paper, right in the middle, was one single line of text. Just seven words. I actually thought it was a joke at first, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought it was maybe like a cover page for a brief that just hadn't finished printing yet.
Right, a printer error or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, the producers assured me that this is it. This is the entirety of today's source material for the deep dive.
Which, I mean, it certainly challenges our standard operating procedure, doesn't
No,
it?
but completely.
Because when you are handed 1,000 pages on, say, the history of exchange traded funds, the challenge is curation. But when you are handed just 7 words, the challenge becomes purely forensic. You are forced into this state of like absolute informational minimalism.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to read exactly what we are analyzing today for you guys. The text provided to us is simply this: excerpts from ETFs Explained, a smart investor's guide.
That's it. That is the whole thing.
That is the complete universe of our source text for this deep dive. The excerpt itself is just the title, 7 words, ETFs Explained.
Smart investor's guide, which, you know, from an analytical standpoint, is actually a fascinating constraint. I totally understand your initial skepticism when you saw the paper, but think about the sheer structural load those 7 words are being asked to carry right
I
now.
mean, it's a lot of weight for a single sentence.
It really is, because in the financial sector, the product itself is essentially invisible. You can't, like, hold an exchange traded fund in your hand. You can't test drive a portfolio strategy like you would a car.
Right, you're just buying an idea, basically.
Exactly. The only tangible thing the consumer interacts with initially is the language used to package it. The words are the product, at least at first glance.
I hear that, but I'm going to play devil's advocate right out of the gate here. Because you, the listener, you guys are sophisticated. You
Yeah.
follow the markets. You understand the basic mechanics of how an ETF functions as a basket of securities.
Sure, our audience definitely knows their stuff.
So why are we spending an entire deep dive analyzing the title of what is, you know, clearly a beginner's handbook? Are we just totally overthinking a marketing intern's Tuesday afternoon project?
I really don't think we are overthinking it at all. In fact, because our audience already understands the mechanics of ETFs, they are actually in the perfect position to analyze the meta narrative here.
The meta narrative.
Yeah, how this information is peddled to the broader public. Because a title is never just a label. It is the front door to the entire concept. It establishes a very specific power dynamic between the author and the reader before a single page is even turned.
Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it.
Right. It dictates expectations, it plays on psychological insecurities, and it explicitly targets this very specific aspirational persona.
So the mission today isn't to learn what an ETF is. We already know that. The mission is to dissect the psychological architecture of financial gatekeeping using this one microscopic string of text as our specimen.
Precisely. It's the exact opposite of our usual approach. Instead of broad strokes, we are using a microscope today.
All right, I'm strapped in. Let's start by looking at the framing of the document itself before we even get to the actual words in the title. The source explicitly introduces itself as excerpts from the main guide.
Yes, notice the plural there. Excerpts.
Right, excerpts with an S. Yet what actually follows is purely the presentation of the title itself. There's no body text.
And this is where we really have to evaluate the philosophy of curation. Because in the traditional publishing world, an editor's job when creating an excerpt is to isolate the absolute essence of the text.
Like finding the best parts.
Exactly. They are tasked with finding the core thesis or maybe the most compelling argument or the most actionable data, and then they present that as a standalone piece of value.
Which totally makes sense. I mean, if I go to the movie theater and watch a trailer, that trailer is supposed to be an excerpt of the film, right? It gives me a taste of the pacing, the plot, maybe a great punchline or a massive explosion.
It's a vertical slice of the whole experience.
Yeah, exactly. But imagine sitting in the theater, the lights dim, and the screen just flashes the title card of the movie for like 5 seconds, and then the lights just come back up.
People would be furious.
I would feel incredibly cheated. Why would any editor define an excerpt as merely the naming convention of the book? It feels like a mistake.
Well, it could be a mistake, but if we analyze it as intentional, it could be viewed as a radically bold statement about where the value of the book actually lies. Let's assume for a moment that this isn't just a clerical error by a publicist.
Okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
Let's look at the effect it has on the reader. When you are completely denied the body text, when the ultimate, most rigorous editorial cut leaves you with literally nothing but the title, it forces a really profound pause.
It's like the author is just slamming the brakes on you. We are so accustomed to just skimming past titles, you know?
We do it all the time.
Right. We read the spine of a book as we pull it off the shelf, and our brain immediately discards the title so we can get straight to chapter one. The title is just the wrapping paper.
And this specific formatting denies you access to the box entirely. It hands you the wrapping paper, locks the door, and basically says, look closer. The premise is the lesson.
Wow. So the wrapper is the gift.
Exactly. It suggests that before you can even begin to engage with the actual data, the historical market trends, or the tax loss harvesting strategies in those unseen pages, you must first fully internalize the journey you are agreeing to take.
I'm still a little skeptical, honestly. It feels almost avant-garde. Like, you know those modern art exhibits where the canvas is just painted completely white and the little placard next to it is supposed to be the actual art?
Yeah, it's very minimalist, very conceptual.
But I will concede that withholding the text does build a strange kind of anticipation. It elevates the title from a simple label to a kind of, I don't know, mythological promise.
It is an incredibly effective framing device.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the modern attention economy, information is infinite, right? But attention is incredibly scarce.
Right, nobody has time for anything anymore.
So by reducing the excerpt to just the title, the author isn't asking for an hour of your time to read a chapter. They are asking for 3 seconds of your time to absorb a promise.
That concept of the hyper-distilled promise brings us right into the actual words of the title. Let's break this down, starting with the first half. ETFs explained.
It's just two words.
Just two words. But they're doing some incredibly heavy lifting.
They absolutely are. It establishes this immediate pedagogical stance.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. The author had an infinite whiteboard. They could have named this book literally anything. An introduction to exchange-traded funds or advanced ETF strategies or even the history of indexing.
They had total freedom.
But they chose ETFs explained. And I really want to focus on the baggage that comes with that specific verb, explained. You don't explain something that is inherently obvious, right?
No, of course not.
Like, you wouldn't write a book called Breathing Explained or Walking Explained. Well, unless you were targeting an audience that had suffered some kind of massive trauma and literally forgotten how to use their own bodies.
What's fascinating here is that the word implies a pre-existing void. By choosing explained, the text immediately assumes something about the broader financial landscape. And more importantly, it assumes something about you, the reader.
It assumes you're completely lost.
Right. It operates on the premise that ETFs are currently shrouded in this dense, tangled web of confusion for the average person. It assumes you need help.
It's acknowledging the friction. It's basically looking the reader in the eye and saying, hey, we know this topic gives you a massive headache.
But notice the power dynamic it establishes right from the jump. It doesn't say ETFs discussed or ETFs explored.
Oh, that's a great point. Explored sounds collaborative. Like we are, you know, putting on our hiking boots and walking into the woods together to see what we can find.
It sounds like a partnership.
Yeah, exactly. But explained sounds like I am sitting at a tiny wooden desk and someone is standing at a chalkboard with a wooden pointer.
Because it is definitive. Explained means the work of understanding has already been completed by the author. The author already holds all the answers.
The mystery is totally solved on their end.
Exactly. And now that processed, refined knowledge is going to be handed down from the mountaintop to you, the absolute novice, it sets up an immediate non-negotiable relationship of mentor and student.
I have to admit, I find that dynamic a little condescending. It really feels like the financial industry's classic move, you know, manufacture a labyrinth and then charge everyday people for the map.
Yeah, it's a very common tactic, unfortunately.
I mean, just think about the first part of that phrase, ETFs. It's an acronym. And acronyms are, by their very nature, a form of linguistic gatekeeping.
They absolutely are. They create an in-group and an out-group.
Right. They are designed to be super efficient for insiders and completely opaque to outsiders. If you are in the club, you know exactly what the letters mean. If you aren't, you are just standing outside in the cold, looking through a frosted window.
So the use of the acronym there, instead of spelling out the full term exchange-traded funds, is highly calculated. It leans into that exact intimidation factor you're describing.
Wants you to feel a little intimidated.
Yes. It presents the insider shorthand, the intimidating wall of capital letters, but then it immediately pairs it with the great equalizer, the word explained.
It's the lowering of the drawbridge.
It is the author holding up a key and saying, look, I know you are outside. I know these letters are designed to make you feel uneducated, but I am offering to decode the secret language of the elite just for you.
But, and this is a big sight, to accept that key, the reader actually has to make a pretty huge concession. To physically pick up a book titled ETFs Explained, you are silently admitting to the world, and honestly to yourself, that you are currently in a state of ignorance.
You are accepting the vulnerability of the student role. And you're right, that does take a certain amount of humility.
It takes a lot of humility to admit you don't know something that everyone else seems to be making money on.
It does. However, the author makes that vulnerability palatable by framing the explanation as a permanent cure. The promise isn't that you will merely read some facts about ETFs.
What's the promise then?
The promise is that your confusion will be entirely eradicated. The actual condition of not knowing will be cured.
Curing the condition of not knowing. Wow. That is an incredibly bold claim for two words to make. But the title doesn't stop at making a promise about the subject matter, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It pivots entirely in the second half to make a promise about the identity of the reader. Which brings us to the subtitle, A Smart Investor's Guide.
This is where the psychological mechanics of the title shift from pedagogy to pure, unadulterated persuasion.
So what does this all mean in the context of financial marketing? Because when I looked at the phrase, a smart investor's guide, my brain immediately starts looking for the inverse.
The opposite version of the book.
Right. Like, does the publisher also offer a dumb investor's guide for people who just actively want to lose their life savings?
Obviously not.
So who is this actually for? Do you have to already possess a really high financial IQ to even understand the book? Or is this like a transformative guarantee?
Like a magic pill.
Yeah. If I, a completely confused novice, buy this book, does the transaction itself automatically grant me the status of being smart?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you're touching on a concept known as aspirational positioning. It is a masterful use of identity as a marketing hook.
Aspirational positioning. Okay, break that down for me.
So in aspirational positioning, a product, or in this case, a piece of information, is framed not around what it physically is, but around the idealized version of the person who consumes it.
I'm not sure I fully buy that being unique here, though. I mean, every single marketing campaign tries to make the user feel good about themselves.
True. It's very common in advertising.
Look at car commercials, right? They all imply you'll be way more adventurous or way more successful if you just lease their mid-size sedan. How is this book title any different from a car ad?
The difference lies in the specific insecurities that are tied to personal finance. Money is deeply, deeply emotional, much more so than a car.
That's fair. People get really weird about money.
The fear of making a foolish financial decision is a paralyzing force for retail investors. The market is constantly dividing participants into smart money, you know, the institutions, the insiders, and dumb money, which is the average retail trader.
Right, the mom and pop investors.
Exactly. So the subtitle, A Smart Investor's Guide, is a subtle challenge. It actually dares you to step into the identity of the former.
Ah, I see the angle now. Because literally no one wakes up and says, I really hope I make some deeply uneducated, catastrophic portfolio decisions today.
Nobody wants to be the dumb money.
We all desperately want to be the smart money. We want to be on the winning side of the trade.
Therefore, the text offers you a psychological reward before you have even absorbed a single data point. It validates you simply for making the choice to pick it up.
Just for holding it in your hands.
Yes. By aligning yourself with this guide, you are preemptively declaring yourself a member of the intelligent cohort. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
You pick it up because you want to be smart.
Mm.
And the act of picking it up is supposed to be the definitive proof that you are, in fact, smart enough to seek out the correct explanation.
It creates a perfect closed loop of validation.
That is wild. But let's look at the specific grammar here for a second. It says a smart investor's guide, right? Not the smart investor's guide. That single letter changing the to A, it changes the entire tone, doesn't it?
It really does. It raises a very interesting dichotomy between exclusivity and inclusivity.
Because if the title was The Smart Investor's Guide, it would sound like a monolith. It would sound like the singular, definitive, holy grail of finance.
It would imply a very rigid, closed system.
Yeah, a system where there is only one way to be smart, and this specific book contains the only authorized rules. It almost sounds a little arrogant, honestly.
It would definitely come across as heavy-handed. Whereas a smart investor's guide feels significantly more democratic. It acknowledges a much broader ecosystem.
It leaves room for other smart people.
Exactly. It suggests that there are many smart investors out there utilizing many different vehicles and strategies. And this specific explanation of ETFs is simply one tool in the intelligent investor's broader toolkit.
So it lowers the barrier to entry while still maintaining that aspirational identity. You can be smart without having to know absolutely everything.
That's very welcoming phrasing.
That makes a lot of sense. It invites you to join a community rather than demanding you worship at some singular altar of financial knowledge.
Uh-huh.
But there's one final word in this microscopic text that we absolutely have to tear apart today.
Which word?
The word guide.
Oh, yes. The implications of that word are profound when applied to financial literature.
Because a guide is a very specific type of tool, right? It is fundamentally different from a dictionary. Or an encyclopedia, or like a historical ledger.
It serves a completely different function.
If I want to know the definition of a word, I look it up in a dictionary. The dictionary doesn't care what I do with the word. It just provides the raw data. But a guide implies motion.
It implies a journey. Let's consider the origin of the concept. In the physical world, when do you actually go out and hire a guide?
Usually when you're going somewhere you've never been before.
Right. You hire a guide when you are attempting to navigate difficult, uncharted, or potentially hazardous terrain. You need a guide to summit a treacherous mountain or to trek through a dense, unpredictable jungle.
You definitely do not need a guide to walk from your front door to your mailbox.
Exactly. You hire a guide when the cost of getting lost is catastrophic.
When getting lost means you lose everything.
Exactly the point. So, by applying the word guide to the financial markets, and specifically to this unexplained realm of ETFs, the author is implicitly characterizing the market as a wilderness.
They're painting a picture of danger.
It frames the financial landscape as inherently volatile and dangerous. It subtly suggests that attempting to traverse this terrain alone, relying purely on your own instincts, is not just difficult, it is fundamentally unsafe.
Wow, it massively elevates the stakes of the entire transaction. Look at the emotional arc we've just mapped out across just 7 words.
It's quite a roller coaster.
It really is. First, the title makes you feel insecure and confused with the word explained, like you're lacking something. Then it strokes your ego and makes you feel aspirational with the phrase smart investor.
It builds you back up.
Yeah. And then finally, it injects this massive dose of existential dread with the word guide. It is effectively whispering to the reader, you are currently lost in a dangerous jungle. You desperately want to survive and be recognized as clever. And I am the only Sherpa who can lead you safely to the other side.
It is the complete manufacturing of dependency. It elevates the value of the unseen text way beyond mere data transfer.
Because you aren't just reading information anymore.
No, you are securing safe passage. The author is offering you a lantern in a dark forest.
It really is a psychological obstacle course.
Mm-hmm.
And to think, I started this deep dive questioning why we were dedicating an hour to a single sentence. I really assumed this would be a hollow exercise.
It's easy to dismiss things that are brief.
But looking at it under the microscope like this, it's honestly astonishing how much architecture goes into the framing of financial knowledge.
The words chosen to package information are never neutral, ever. They are highly calibrated instruments, and they're designed to position the reader, dictate emotional responses, and establish authority before you even realize what's happening.
Let's bring this all together for everyone listening. We set out on a highly unusual mission today to dissect a source material that consisted entirely of a title and a subtitle. ETFs Explained, A Smart Investor's Guide.
And we discovered that treating a title as an excerpt forces us to really confront the promises a text makes before it delivers any actual value.
Right. We saw how the phrase ETFs Explained capitalizes on the inherent complexity of financial acronyms. It assumes a baseline of confusion and firmly positions the author as the ultimate, unquestionable authority.
And we broke down how the subtitle, A Smart Investor's Guide, operates as this brilliant piece of aspirational positioning.
It uses the reader's desire to be part of the smart money crowd as a literal magnet. While the word guide subtly implies that the financial markets are a hazardous wilderness that just cannot be survived without the author's protection.
It serves as a really powerful reminder of how deeply we are influenced by the packaging of information. The lens through which data is presented often shapes our understanding way more than the data itself.
And that brings us to why this deeply analytical exercise actually matters to you, the listener. Because you might know everything there is to know about how an ETF is constructed. You might understand expense ratios and tracking error and bid-ask spreads perfectly.
But that doesn't mean you're immune to the framing.
Exactly. Because every single day, you are bombarded with information that is framed just as aggressively as this title. From complex financial prospectuses to the daily barrage of news headlines to the way a new software tool is pitched at your office.
Being consciously aware of this framing architecture is what actually makes you a critical consumer of information. When you understand how language is being used to position you, you can detach from the emotional manipulation.
You can take a breath and step back.
Yes. You can ask yourself, why is this author assuming I need an explanation? Why are they appealing to my vanity by calling me smart? What underlying vulnerabilities is this text trying to exploit?
Once you see the strings, you really can't unsee them. You realize that from the very first syllable of any document, someone is attempting to guide your perception.
It strips away the author's unearned authority, and that empowers you to navigate the information entirely on your own terms. You stop accepting the path the guide demands you walk, and you start evaluating whether the path actually leads where you want to go.
It completely flips the dynamic. You are no longer the passive student just sitting there receiving an explanation. You become the active interrogator of the premise itself.
Which is exactly where you want to be as an investor.
Which leaves me with one final provocative thought for you to chew on as you go about your day. It's something that builds on this entire dissection of authority and guidance that we've been talking about.
Let's hear it.
When a piece of financial literature promises to elevate you to the status of a smart investor, purely through its explanations, when it basically demands you view the market as a dangerous wilderness and offers itself up as your only reliable guide, does true financial wisdom actually come from obediently following that guide's instructions? Or does the real definition of being a smart investor come from the deep skepticism, the critical thinking, and the independent scrutiny you apply to the title long before you ever agree to turn the very first page?